Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, January 11, 2018. China donates millions of dollars to the South Sudan government for humanitarian aid.
The 63 million which you currently are reporting should be used for setting up agricultural plantation farms in the country. These farms will be used, of course, for producing food commodities.
And the warring parties in South Sudan appear to have different definitions of a prisoner of war.
We consider them as criminals. We consider them as criminals or whatever description you like to give them. But we can tell you that they are armed fighters involved in subversive activities against the government. They were captured in battles.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A former minister of health in Upper Nile State says the Kiir administration has violated terms of the cessation of hostility deal signed last month in Addis Ababa. Stephen Lord says the government has not released all political detainees and prisoners of war as required by the ceasefire agreement. He claims the government is also fighting rebels in the former Upper Nile and Jonglei states.
There are some people who are the prisoners of war. They who have been captured at war, and they are with them now in their jail. And also there are political detainees. I know one of the governor of Kopoeta for the IRO is arrested from Kakuma. Somebody called Marco is now under security threat. And there is also Gadeda, is one of the political detainees. There is Dong, and there is also somebody called Agri.
Do you know where these people are kept? Because the information minister was saying if anybody has information on where they are kept, should come forward.
We don't know where they are kept, but we thought they may be in under the security arrest.
It is easy to say they are under security arrest, but do you know where they are kept in South Sudan so that people can go and see them?
Yes, John, what I know, there Gadeda was brought from Kenya, so Marco was brought from Kenya, Adam was brought from Kenya, Agri was brought from Kenya. But actually, because I'm not staying in Juba, I'm 25 kilometers from Juba's center, and I could not know their whereabouts.
And why are you not staying in Juba?
Yes, because I'm around Juba, which is about 20 kilometers away from Juba. And it is as if I'm in Juba.
You are making a very strong allegation that the government has not released its political detainees or prisoners of war. If somebody asks you to give proof,
well,
what proof do you have?
When the ceasefire was signed, we thought it is a question get to all the citizens of South Sudan. As you knew very well, that when the ceasefire was signed, everybody on Juba Street was very happy. And they were talking on VOA, as you may witness, that they were very happy that they had given Christmas gifts by signing the ceasefire. But now the ceasefire has turned to be violent at the moment.
Who is violating the ceasefire?
The government.
Where? I mean, can you give us instances where you have witnessed the violation of the ceasefire?
Well, the first five president is now in Greater Akobo fighting in three places. Fighting in what? In Akobo and also in a place called Yai.
The first vice president went in those three states to quell down intercommunal violence. I mean, I don't know of any fighting going on there. Tell us more if you know.
To go and attack the people in the area, even trying to disarm the citizens in the area.
We cover South Sudan and there are no reports of fighting in those areas you're mentioning. I mean, when did that fighting take place?
They fought the day before yesterday. Even today I'm hearing that there is fighting taking place.
Where is it taking place?
In Jai and also in Wad and the same thing in Akoba and also Kodok.
And who is fighting who?
The government is fighting the IO.
You are in Juba. How do you get this information?
We have got our relatives on the ground. This is where we are getting this information. They are the eyewitnesses who are trying to inform us so that we contact the international. We want to let international community alert of what the government is doing. So by now, the ceasefire.
But how would you respond to people who will say maybe the people who are providing you with information are people who have vested interest in South Sudan politics, or they are people who don't like the first vice president? How would you react to that?
Well, these are the realities. We do not know how to contact and let international community alert of what is going on the violation of ceasefire. So they just keep us informed so that we have to make the international community alert of what is taking place.
That's Stephen Lohr, former health minister in the Upper Nile State. He was speaking to me from an undisclosed location outside Juba Town earlier today. The Geneva Convention has a clear, extensive definition of who constitutes a prisoner of war. But there are some conflicting definitions of a prisoner of war among South Sudan's warring parties. Earlier this week, South Sudan Information Minister said the government had no political detainees in its custody. For VOA News, Ian Bior reports from Washington.
Despite a signed agreement by the government and opposition as part of a recent cessation of hostilities deal in Addis Ababa to free all political detainees and prisoners of war by last Sunday, six opposition fighters captured by government forces in northern Lihir State remain in the custody of the government. SPLA spokesman Lul Roy Kwong says the men are receiving medical treatment after sustaining gunshot wounds.
What we know, they were captured in a battle. They clearly came and attacked our positions. We had to fight back in self-defense, and as a result, they were captured. So I would say they were combatants that were captured in a battle field.
Earlier this week, South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makuei denied accusations that his government was holding prisoners of war.
The government of the Republic of South Sudan has no political detainees. And so far, we have no knowledge of any prisoners of war. People in our custodies are mere criminals who committed offenses, and they are charged according to the law. But political detainees as such, those who were detained for political reasons, we have no political detainees, we have no political prisoners. And once a person continues to be a political detainee, as long as that person is not convicted. But once you are convicted, you are no longer a political prisoner, but you are a prisoner, a convict. So far, we don't have any knowledge of political detainees or political prisoners. So on our side, we have nobody actually to release.
The Geneva Convention has an extensive definition of a prisoner of war. One of the categories of a prisoner of war is members of regular armed forces who profess allegiance to a government or an authority not recognized by the detaining power. Another category defines a prisoner of war as members of the armed forces of a party to the conflict, as well as members of militias forming part of such armed forces. Roy distanced himself from using the term prisoner of war to describe the six men in the government's custody, offering his own description instead.
We consider them as criminals. We consider them as criminals, or whatever description you like to give them, but we can tell you that they are armed fighters involved in subversive activities against the government. They were captured in battles, and because we are a signatory to all the international conventions, we spared their lives, and that's why we came out admitting that we had captured rebels or criminals who came to attack us at our defensive positions.
Roy says they have contacted the International Committee of the Red Cross and insist the government has every intention of releasing the six men in accordance with international law. But he says he has yet to hear from the ICRC about their appeal. The cessation of hostilities agreement came into effect just before Christmas, but both government and rebel forces have accused each other of violating the agreement. For his part, Roy says the government registered two violations yesterday, and in one of these instances, Roy accuses rebels of deliberately attacking civilians.
Yesterday at around 4, we heard civilians that were being escorted back to their villages coming under heavy attacks from rebels in Nasser, east of Nasser at Kedbeck. From Sunday, civilians started coming back to government-controlled town of Nasser. The rebels were not happy with this new change of heart of civilians visiting government control areas, and as a result, they were deliberately targeted yesterday There was also a violation yesterday, northwest of Juba. Reb was loyal to Lieutenant Colonel Chen, ambushed a convoy that was coming from the direction of Amadi State and Meridi. They were ambushed about 3 kilometers away from Luri. You know, Luri is about 20 kilometers northwest of Juba.
Roy says, as far as he knows, the six men are the only rebel combatants who are in the custody of the government at this time. Ayan Bior for VOA News, Washington.
The Chinese government today donated 400 million Chinese yen, which is equivalent to $63 million, to the South Sudan government. The Chinese ambassador to South Sudan says the money will be used for providing humanitarian assistance. For VOA News, Waki, Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Chinese officials announced the donation in Juba today during a brief ceremony where Chinese ambassador to Juba, Ha Zhangdong, and South Sudanese Foreign Affairs Minister Deng Alor signed a memorandum of understanding on how the money will be spent. The two officials described the donation as part of the economic cooperation between South Sudan and China. Beijing has invested billions of dollars in South Sudan's oil sector. It has also sent 1,000 troops to South Sudan to serve as UN peacekeepers and has donated millions of dollars in efforts to end the four-year conflict. Minister Alor praised China for the generous donation and stressed that the government will use the money for its intended purpose, provide much-needed humanitarian assistance across the country. But Alor says some of the money will also go toward beefing up the state-owned South Sudan Broadcasting Corporation.
You know, broadcasting facilities is going to help a great deal. It's informing the people of South Sudan, is helping the people of South Sudan. Humanitarian aid, as all of us know, the people of South Sudan are in dire need of humanitarian assistance. And China has come again to support us, support the people of South Sudan.
Shandong says China's donation underscores the strong ties between Beijing and Juba.
This agreement is a new symbol of the traditional friendship between our two peoples and the good cooperation between our two governments. We know that South Sudan, for the time being, is at a very critical moment to seeking the goal of a permanent peace and the stability and the prosperity.
Juba resident Wani Richard says the money from China should be invested in rural areas to boost the country's agricultural sector.
The 63 million which currently you are reporting already given to the South Sudan government should be used for setting up agricultural plantation farms in the country. These farms will be used, of course, for producing food commodities in the country. I think if it is done so, it is going to help the population of South Sudan with the availability of food. This one is going to counter the current food crisis in markets.
Another Juba resident, Abuor Mabie, says the money should go toward improving the country's infrastructure.
I would suggest that this money should go as the infrastructure for development of South Sudan, because right now, every time war, every now and then war, it should be done. Like, for example, we don't have electricity for the big city, doesn't have electricity. So in my opinion, I would suggest they should use that money for useful thing, at least to develop.
In June last year, China donated $5 million for humanitarian assistance, especially food aid in South Sudan. It also recently donated thousands of metric tons of rice for severely food insecure people across the country. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, residents in Tombora State say it is too dangerous to travel in and out of the state. Find out why when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
can you give up your cell phone for a day? Why or why not?
Well, I can't give up my cell phone because I have crucial information. I am exposed to the world. I need to know what is happening on a daily basis.
I can give out my cell phone if for a day, but I can't give it out forever, you know. It's just for a moment. Huh? It doesn't matter.
No, I can't because I do receive call on phone on it. Somebody can call me. Then I receive a call. If I leave without it, my friend cannot get me. That is the reason why I cannot leave without it.
I can, but no, it's not that easy. No, I can't. I have to communicate to my loved ones.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Some residents of Najero County are calling on authorities in Tombora State to provide security along the Tombora-Wau Road to allow traders to bring in goods. The residents say since fighting broke out in Wau in June last year, several attacks have occurred along the road linking Najero to Wau, making it impossible for traders to bring food and other supplies to the area. Michael Atit has the story for VOA from Juba.
Najero County is located 285 kilometers north of Tombora town and borders Wau State in the north. Residents say for the past 18 months, they have not been able to travel outside of the county or communicate with the people outside the area because of the insecurity along the road, the main road leading in and out of the county. Though it has not been closed officially, residents are too afraid to use it for fear of being attacked by armed groups. Residents complained to Tombora State Governor Patrick Raphael Zomoi, who visited the area last week to see for himself how insecurity along the Tombora Wau Road affects the lives of Najero residents. Arcangelo Kumbo John is a youth leader in Najero County.
Road should be set on so to keep the youth busy, to go in other places, to bring more skills in other things. That's what we are begging you to try your level to open for us the road. We are totally in darkness, Honorable Governor. The problem is we don't have network. We are not communicating outside. Imagine only radio call is what is supporting us.
Residents say they have been disconnected from mobile phone networks since June when the fighting broke out and some telecommunications infrastructure such as boosters and antenna were destroyed. They say mobile phones are lifeline for many people of Najero, and when they are cut off, they have nowhere to turn for help. Speaking in Arabic, Balia Digido, the Najero County Commissioner, hails the deployment of government soldiers in the area who, he says, are working jointly with civilians to produce food.
Our SPLA forces in this rainy season cultivated together with the civilians. They used to plant their crops between January and March, and they would harvest them early, which would help civilians prepare themselves to cultivate their own. They are working together as one people.
Governor Zomoi praised Najero residents for being resilient in the face of challenges. Speaking in Arabic, the governor says he is working with Wau authorities to secure the Tombora Wau Road so citizens of both states can move freely.
I went to Wau recently with the aim of talking with the authorities so we can see how to open the road between Tombora and Wau. The government of Wau is ready to work with us for the road to be open. I want to assure you that within this January, you will be seeing cars moving along Wau-Tombora Road.
Governor Zomoi assured Najero residents that the government is working hard to restore peace in the area. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
Some Former South Sudanese students now living in refugee camps in northern Uganda are finding innovative ways to continue their higher education. Many at the Rhino Settlement Camp in Arua are turning to long-distance learning, which they say are of benefit to them. Simon Peter Apiku has the story for VOA from Arua, Uganda.
South Sudanese Feni Ivan says he was a student studying social studies at the University of Juba until July 2016, when renewed fighting in the capital forced him to abandon his studies and flee to Uganda.
When there is war, that is actually instability. You find that on the side of us, like the youth, you find you cannot study, it affects your education.
Ivan ended up at the Rhino Settlement Camp. Ivan says he tried and failed to obtain a scholarship to continue his studies in Uganda. Later, he enrolled in a long-distance learning course at the Ugandan Christian University in Kampala. He says the lower costs of online courses, which range from $400 to $650 a course per semester, made it easier to persuade a relative abroad to pay his tuition fees. UNHCR and other aid groups have helped refugee students with tuition fees in the past, but budgets are tight, and aid groups have cut back on scholarship programs. Hakim Kwenyo, another South Sudanese refugee, is enrolled for an online learning course in agriculture and rural innovation at Uganda's Makerere University. He says the number of refugees enrolling for such courses is growing, particularly within the six zones of the Rhino Settlement Camp.
At my settlement, where I come from, there are a good number of students who are doing long-distance learning. I believe in all these settlements. Because there are a number of, this is six zones, there are a number of students coming out of those zones.
The strong determination of refugees to graduate from an accredited university despite being forced to flee their homes and live in a settlement camp has inspired people like Dominic Tumwekwase, who also resides in the settlement and takes online courses.
I'm currently doing a postgraduate diploma in behavior therapy. It is an international course from National University of Singapore.
Ivan, who was a first-year student studying for a university degree when he fled South Sudan, is working on a certificate program, but says he is not disappointed.
I like being with the community. I like helping the needy. I like working with people who are especially vulnerable.
These students are encouraging other refugee youth to enroll in online courses or find other meaningful outlets so they don't get involved in deviant behavior such as alcohol and drug abuse. Meanwhile, the UN Refugee Agency says with much of its appeal for South Sudanese refugees unfunded, it must place priority on life-saving assistance such as food and medicine, which leaves very little cash left over for education. For VOA News, I am Simon Peter Apiku in Arua.
We now turn to Zimbabwe, where the Electoral Commission has initiated another phase of its nationwide voter registration. This comes after calls for the exercise to continue after it ended in December, having registered fewer people than expected. Reporter Kuzai Zenivashi reports.
In preparation for elections later this year, Zimbabwe has been compiling a new voters roll using biometric voter registration system known as BVR. Commissioner Emmanuel Magade is the acting chairperson of Zimbabwe Electoral Commission.
The Zimbabwe Electoral Commission embarked on a national biometric voter registration exercise during the period running from the 14th of September 2017 to the 19th of December 2017. This exercise resulted in a provisional total of 4,879,482 voters being registered countrywide.
He says during the same period, the Registrar General was on a drive to issue identification cards to Zimbabweans around the country. He says, however, there were irregularities in the two campaigns.
The voter and civil registration exercises were initially not synchronized resulting in some people being left out of the voter registration blitz or our period of intensity. After observing this anomaly and challenge, representations from various stakeholders on the BVR exercise to the commission were made.
Wednesday, the ZEC kicked off another registration blitz. It was ordered mainly because of the ID card problem, as well as the December High Court order allowing Zimbabweans classified as aliens to vote.
The commission is of the view that these representations are legitimate and well-founded. As a result, we have decided to embark upon a mop-up exercise that will be conducted in order to afford every Zimbabwean an opportunity to register to vote.
The mop-up exercise runs until the 8th of February. There were long lines of people this morning at one registration center in Harare. Danford Ngaidzore, a youth leader in the opposition movement for democratic change, has been monitoring the registration process.
We are very much happy. High turnout is very good, it's promising. And actually, we have more youths who have come to register to vote. So it's something which is very promising, considering the economic challenges which the country is facing.
The ZEC had initially aimed to register 7 million voters, but has since revised that target, saying it was overly ambitious. Magade says he will be happy to register more than 5 million people. Political activists hope this period will be enough to register Zimbabweans missed on the last round, as well as nearly 1 million people classified as aliens. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinavashe from Harare.
That story by Zinavashe from Harare brings us to the end of our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Sura Yako by Sauti Sol. We have been listening to Sauti Sol with the song Surayako Muzuri, which means you're good looking. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We'd like to hear what you think about this show. You can reach us at southsudan@voanews.com. You can also check us on our Facebook page. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.